As promised, Mr. Dolman is now with us in studio. Good to have you here, sir.
Well, thanks for having me.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
A year ago we chatted before the voting, and you were, you know, very much in the mix, and you talked about the fact that you had come to peace with whatever happened. You know, if you get in, wouldn't mind, but that you're not going to necessarily beat yourself up over it or curl up in the fetal position. I assume you approached it this year pretty much the same way.
I did. You don't know how these guys are going to vote. You really don't. They're judging you on a body of work that you did, in my case, 12 years ago. You know, it was the last game I played. And, you know, I didn't want to get so emotional connected to it.
Sure.
Where that, you know, it would take so long for it to happen where you lose interest, you become bitter, disengaged, and nothing. You don't enjoy it the way that you should enjoy it.
It's a good way to put it. And yet I would think now that it's done and now that you're in and now that you're going to have a number of months to kind of, you know, revel in that and build up to the actual induction, it's got to be pretty cool.
It's very cool. I've been running since last Thursday. I drove to Indianapolis. I have a lot of family there. I was
right.
Born there. Spent the time in Indianapolis, and we were running around. I did media role. Saturday was the announcement, and from Saturday, you know, my life changed. You know, at probably 6:01. I mean, really, it's been a whirlwind since then. Drove back Wednesday, changed clothes, packed a small bag, came up here today.
Yeah, that's not bad at all. And, you know, I was talking with some folks earlier. Maybe this is an age thing. Because I was obviously here when you played, and I'm old enough also to have, you know, even if I wasn't in this business, old enough to watch you play. And it almost seems like a lot of kids who didn't see you play have almost had to been told, because you come from a different chapter in Vikings history and went on and played with some other teams, it's odd. It's almost like they've got to be reacquainted with who you are. Have you gotten that feeling a little bit?
You know, The younger players, one of the things I was as a player, I was always aware of the history of the game.
Yep.
And I don't know if players are that connected to the history of the game now as they were when I played. You know, there's guys, I played with Jimmy Kleinsaucer. He retires
this year.
Good point,
yeah.
So, I mean, you know, that span of time that when one career ends and another one begins, you kind of, you know, they kind of blur, the lines become blurry a little bit. So I think that, you know, the modern day player need to really follow up. Most of the people say, you know, I remember you from Madden or Techno Bowl. That's it. I'm like, I actually really played, but that is your thing. I remember you from Madden. I remember you from Techno Bowl.
Not only did you play 150 and a half sacks, that's fourth all time. 8 interceptions, which I actually want to talk about at some point, and 24, and by the way, among sack leaders, that's fourth all-time. I should say that's tied for most all-time, I should say, with Lawrence Taylor. Career fumble recoveries, a very underrated part, I think, of your career and any great defensive player's career, 24 fumble recoveries as well. Of all the stats, and you've got a lot of good ones, and you know a lot of Pro Bowls, et cetera, individually speaking, what is the one that you are proudest about, would you say?
Guys that I played with, they were all pro when we played together. That, by far, is the biggest, achievement or accolade that I think any player can get. Because you not only were a good player, you helped your teammates become good players.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, teammates from
Keith Millard,
Dana Stubblefield, Bryant Young, Henry Thomas, a young John Randall. I mean, it's those kind of things that, and I would even put, you know, Carl Lee in there because
sure.
Carl Lee was my corner.
Yeah, that's right. And, great cover guy. Yeah.
Great cover guy. And I mean, you know, it's easy to be a great cover guy when you didn't have to cover that long.
it didn't hurt. That's
yeah.
For sure.
So, you know, when you're playing with guys like that, that really not only, you know, you're playing hard, but you're leading by example, that makes you feel really good.
You know, my recollection of you is that you had, relatively speaking, pretty good health as a pro player. And I bring it up because you mentioned Millard, and Millard was another terror of a defensive lineman, a tackle. And then everything seemed to change after he had a horrible injury on the dome turf. Right. I think back when the turf was really, well, you could tell me, it was really tough and dangerous probably to play on. And never the same after that. Sometimes it goes that way, sometimes it doesn't. And I would think for you, that's another part of the thing that would be a blessing, is that relatively speaking, you never had that kind of cataclysmic injury. And part, you know, again, part of your deal was your explosiveness, your quickness, that Millard had to deal with, and that's another blessing for you as you look back on your career. Fair enough?
That's a fair assessment. I mean, I was a guy that, you know, with Keith Millard on our defensive line, I mean, he was a great player in himself. So, I mean, you know, there was always that competition between us.
Right, I remember.
We always knew to be a great defensive line, you had to have two guys. It was Reggie White and Jerome Brown. It was Dexter Manley and Charles Manley. I mean, you know, you always had to have two guys that could, you know, constantly bring it, but fuel each other. But we were blessed. I mean, we had Henry Thomas as well.
That's
now.
That's right, yeah.
And Henry had, I think he finished his career with 90 sacks, you know. So, I mean, as a nose tackle, you know, Cortez Kennedy went into the Hall of Fame with 94 sacks as a nose tackle. So, you know, these are guys that that always kind of we fed off each other. And we always complimented each other. And I thought that was some of the best football that I've ever seen played by a defensive line.
Chris Dolman is our guest on The Fan in studio today. He's in town as he talks to folks about what became official Saturday night. He'll be inducted this summer into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Forgive me if I have missed this. Have you made a decision on who will be your presenter yet? Have you talked about that? What are your thoughts in that regard?
Well, I did make a decision. I'm going to let my son do it, Evan. He was born here in Minnesota. He's been, you know, one of my biggest fans. You know, he's proud of me. I'm very proud of him. And I think, you know, as a father, this is something that is probably one of the greatest things you can really let your child do.
Terrific gesture. How old is he now?
He's 21. He'll be 22 by then.
21, and he was born here.
Born here.
Wow. And so is he a big football fan in general, and followed you obviously very closely?
He is a big football fan. You know, he plays basketball, but he is a big football fan. And, you know, he was always one of those kids where that, you know, I told him, you do what you want to do. It's very rare that you have a great father, then you have a second generation, a great, you know, son, and, you know, so on and
sure.
so on. Usually it's one of those things where that, you know, it kind of dips and, you know, balance itself out. But, you know, I'm very proud of him.
Let me ask Garzy here, doing on-air production meeting. Should we take a short pause and not get too far behind here, or just go straight through?
I think we can go straight through.
Keep going. Okay, we'll do it. With Mr. Dolman. It was funny because we were talking about, your getting in yesterday and the day before, and I got a couple emails from people saying, well, one, actually, to be specific, saying, well, yeah, but I've read some interviews where he said he liked playing for the 49ers better, and he left here. And I had to remind people, you got traded, as I recall.
There was no free agency.
It wasn't like you said that I'm done with Minnesota, I can't stand
right.
it anymore. You got traded to the Atlanta Falcons, did you not?
Absolutely, absolutely. In 94, I'm sorry, you know, basically, at the end of the season, Dennis Green and them had made the decision that they were getting rid of me. They felt that I was getting too old to play. I don't know what that was about. But they were moving more towards offense. And if you look at it, you know, there was a trend where Keith Millard was traded, Joey Browner was
yes.
traded, Henry Thomas was traded. And you're basically, you know, decimating your defense. So, but they wanted to build the offense. And they felt that the offense was the thing that was going to carry them to a championship. Well, I mean, obviously we know that didn't happen. So when I was traded away, I had two options. It was either the Philadelphia Eagles, because they were interested in me because they lost Reggie, or going to the Atlanta Falcons, where I bought property already down in Atlanta. To me, it only made more sense to go to Atlanta. And I went down there, and it was a great experience because now I wasn't surrounded by, you know, great players like, you know.
Different situation.
You
know, yeah,
totally different situation. Now, can you make it happen where you are? Are you a systems guy or are you a great football player? And I went there, led their team in sacks, got hurt. finished second on a team in sacks behind Chuck Smith the second year, but I still made the Pro Bowl. You know, I'm one of, what, six players in the history of the league to make the Pro Bowl on three different teams?
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, you know, that's not a guy that's a product of a system. Then when, you know, when I became a free agent, you know, 2 years later, now you got to keep in mind, you know, you're looking at, what, year 11? You know, I went to San Francisco, and I wanted to give myself a chance to win a championship because they had Steve Young, they had Jerry, they had, you know, a great running game, they had great, pretty much, you know, the fundamentals of a great football team. So, you know, went out there and played the NFC Championship game, lost to Green Bay, and, you know, I came back here and retired, thanked all my fans, really appreciated my time here. My brother lives here, still have family here, come up here several times a year, and here I am here again today, you know, as a Hall of Famer.
We will get a, let's get a short pause in now. I want to ask you what you remember about the 1987 season and the way that finished, an incredible playoff run that ended maybe, you know, one pass or one completion short of at least sending the game into OT, if that still burns at you at all. Chris Dolman is our in-studio guest, newest member of the Hall of Fame, will be inducted this summer. Back with more Dolman in a moment here on The Fan.
You're listening to Barrero on The Fan.
Chris Dolman, our in-studio guest. The word came down Saturday night that he is in the class of 2012 Pro Football Hall of Fame along with four others, and we were chatting before, or I mentioned before the break, I wanted to talk about 1987. It was a very curious year, I don't have to tell you, in that you guys got off to a nice start, and then the strike hit,
right?
And then it became fairly apparent that Mike Lynn's approach to putting together a replacement team was, oh my God, we got to put together a replacement team. And it was one of the worst teams in the history of the National Football League, went 0-3, so then suddenly you're kind of behind the eight ball again. Then you kind of get jump started, but then you lose three of your last four regular season and need help to get in. Mm-hmm. And I will fully admit I was in the group that said they don't even deserve to get in. Millard had a meltdown in the locker room after the game that you lost. I think to Wash was it? To, I can't remember who it was to. Might have been Washington. Basically saying the same thing. We don't even deserve to get in. It's a joke. Mm-hmm. You got in, and then all hell broke loose. You dominated the Saints.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you got down in that game 10-0, had the quarterback change, Wilson comes in, and you score the next 44 points, I believe.
Yeah.
You follow that with the San Francisco dominance out there, and then you go to Washington and come very close to at least tending that game into OT. Does that, any part of you still, I mean, what do you remember about that run? Because that was as good a playoff run for the Vikings in terms of who you beat, where you beat them, as probably they've ever had.
Well, you know, the thing that I remember about it is that, you know, we were within a catch of winning the game. I think we were down by four. A field goal wasn't going to do us any good. You know, we had to score six, and we had very, very, very little time left on the clock. You know, I wish it would have been on the defense versus the offense because, you know, as long as I could remember, the offense has always been the Achilles heel for the Minnesota Vikings. We've always had more talent on defense than we had on offense. Not that we had bad offenses,
right,
but we didn't have the type of offense that can go down and score at will. You know, we didn't have a New England Patriots or a Pittsburgh Steelers,
Packers,
Packers type of offense. And for whatever reason, we just never been able to get that fixed. But it was just, you know, when Darryl Green, you know, got his hand between Darren Nelson and the ball.
That's right.
It was just one of those things where it's like, I mean, that was it.
Was there any part of you when the playoffs started and then as it proceeded that shocked even you? Because, you know, again, you started the playoffs or with Tommy being the QB or trying to be the QB, and then he gets hurt and Wade comes out of nowhere and gets on one of his good streaks where he could be very good. Defensively, you guys were unbelievable. particularly, as I recall, in the San Francisco game, you harassed basically from start to finish. That was the key to the game. Anthony Carter was very good, but defensively you were good. Was there any part of you going, how's this happening? How do we get on this kind of a roll? Because no one could see it coming, I don't think.
Well, we always had talent. The team team always had talent. Probably the least talented position was the quarterback on our team. Yeah. I mean, you know, and I'm not saying anything bad about Wade or Rich Gannon or Sean Salisbury or Tommy Kramer. But, you know, we had, I'm talking about unbelievable talent, you know, in our secondary, in our tight end, in our O-line, in our wide receivers. I mean, just unbelievable talent. But the thing about the you know, that quarterback position or that running back position, we just never had that guy. We didn't have an Adrian Peterson. You know, if we had an Adrian Peterson, I think that would have changed the game.
Well, that was the whole point of the Herschel Walker trade,
yeah,
obviously, and it just he was done by that point, unfortunately.
Yeah, but he wasn't Adrian Peterson.
No, that's for sure.
So, I mean, you know, and I love Herschel. I mean, it's just, you know, but you need those kind of guys to kind of tote that, you know, that heavy weight when you get down in that, you know, that, you know, when that those very tough yards, you got to get them.
What do you remember about Herschel coming here and the hubbub and so forth? Because now it's, you know, fans still have nightmares because of the trade and, you know, how much was given up and the fact that, you know, he came in and had that one, the first run was terrific, lost his shoe and almost went the distance, right? There were very few other real good moments, and reality set in that you're not getting the guy you hoped was the last piece that you needed. What do you remember about all of that?
You know, the big thing that I remember is that Herschel was a great, and I mean an absolutely great college football player. He was never a great NFL player. He was never great. Even when he was with Dallas, they weren't very good. You know, you keep in mind, I mean, he was there with Troy Aikman and, you know, and all those guys, they weren't very good. And it was just a situation where that, you know, bringing him in wasn't going to make us that much better, even though we gave away a lot of great players, a lot of great players. It's kind of that feeling where that, you know, what's behind door number one or door number two, and they show you, okay, this is what you got here right here in door number one. Door number two, do you want to, you know,
take
really,
a shot.
Yeah, take a shot for it. And we lost. I would never trade as many players for one player.
Well, we did. The other thing that was weird about that deal was that it was presented to everybody as it's either going to be all these players and all or these draft choices, not both. And ultimately, it ended up being both.
Yeah.
And that made it even harder, I think, for everybody to understand because you're giving up. Well, it's unprecedented. I mean, there's never going to be. I don't think there'll ever be another trade like it. Do you?
I don't think so. And I mean, who's making that decision? I mean, one guy cannot make that decision because really, even to this day, I think, you know, Minnesota still might suffer a little bit from, you know, those decisions that you made back in 19. What was that?
That year, the Herschel year was a 92. We'll look it up. I'm bad at my year. No, it can't be 92.
I feel like it was 89.
89. Had to be, it had to be the late 80s because I think, Denny was here by then. Let's also talk a little bit about the process because here there are a lot of people very frustrated that Chris Carter, is not in. I would think you could talk about the frustration because it took time. There was a process, despite your numbers, you're obviously having Hall of Fame numbers, before you went in. What would you say to those who are frustrated or delighted that you're in, but are frustrated that you know, they keep going, what are we waiting for? I mean, Chris Carter's got to be a Hall of Famer.
Well, and I would say to them, Chris Carter is a Hall of Famer. But so is Chris Dolman. So is John Randall. So is Randall McDaniel, Carl Eller, Alan Page, you know, Fran Tarkenton, you know, Bud Grant. These are guys that you should be very proud of. For the simple fact, they're all Minnesota Vikings. You know, Gary Zimmerman, all Minnesota Vikings. So, you know, it's not about one guy. And that's where they're making their mistake. Chris Carter should be in. Not that, you know, one of our Viking players should be in. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you got Chris Carter, you had myself. I mean, you got to look at that thing and saying, you know, one of these guys should go in. because they're deserving of it, not campaigning for just one guy.
And he's going to get in. It's just a matter of when, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, he's a finalist. He has a 97% chance of making it. I think Chris is not in that 3%. I think he's going to make it. You know, the problem is that things kind of rolled out for him really fast. You know, when he retired, the following year, boom, they put him in the Ring of Honor. Well, how do you think that made me feel? You know, and I was a, you know, first-round pick here, posted, you know, great numbers here, did all the stuff that, you know, that you would expect your first-round pick to do. And I'm sitting there watching him going to the Ring of Honor while I'm sitting at home, you know, and, you know, John Randall, Randall McDaniel, you know, those guys. I mean, we all feel the same way.
Sure.
Then, you know, when he came up for the Hall, his eligibility was up, you know, he went directly into the finals list. Well, you know, and he's been in that position for a long time. It probably would have served him a little bit better if this process, his post-career process, would have been a little slower. Because now it's a thing where that I'm making progress, so that all of a sudden putting you in the front of the class, because the voters don't see it that way. They just don't see it that way. They're gonna put in the guy that they feel is the best. Now, you know, will he get in? Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no question in my mind. But what goes to say that he's going to go in next year? Because you still got Tim Brown, you still got, you know, Andre Reed, out there.
That's exactly.
I mean, what makes him deserving over those guys, you know, then putting in two Vikings right away? They had to make a choice. I think in that room, they're sitting up and saying, okay, we can put in a defensive end or we can put in a wide receiver. They said the defensive end.
What are you doing these days?
Well, I have an auction site, ChrisDolmanProAuctions.com. What we do is we take charities, foundations, 501c3s, and we raise money for them. And we do it by their silent auction items. We can provide items for them, put them online, and reach a larger population for them to raise their money for their charities.
Do you, it sounds like you've gotten into that. You kind of enjoy that
I love
whole
it.
Deal.
Yeah. I really do. I was, you know, I got into the car business, and I'm a big guy who likes, you know, helping other people. So, you know, I really love the fact that when someone bought a new car, you know, they it was their baby. I mean, you know, they smelled it and they rubbed it. And I mean, it was just like, don't touch it. Don't touch. Just look at it. So when I'm able to come into a situation like, you know, our auction site, where you're helping, you know, I mean, large and small mom and pop charities, you know, raise money or give them the ability to go out and have, you know, items from Eli Manning from a fulfillment house or Michael Strahan or Tom Brady or Chris Carter jersey. I mean, those kind of things that they probably wouldn't have access to. Or, you know, you're dealing with us where that you have a personal experience with a Andrew Luck, you know, a Hall of Famer like Eric Dickerson or, you know, myself. You know, you got LC Greenwood, college coaches that are, you know, donating their time to help charities raise money. It's all a wonderful thing, and being able to help those who are least able to help themselves makes me feel good every night.
I appreciate you coming in to visit us. Congratulations, and this should be a lot. The next 6 months or whatever it's going to be.
Year.
This should be next year basically. Yeah, this should be you basically should enjoy yourself, and it sounds like you're going to.
Well, I'm gonna try to squeeze every drop out of this.
Yeah.
This is this process. They tell you, you know, enjoy it as much as you can because next year we're gonna have a new class. They're gonna be doing it.
That's it.
And the other thing is that you'll be able to enjoy it a little bit better because you don't have the stresses of running around. I mean, you know, Mark, I've been home. I haven't even been home 24 hours yet. And this happened last week, so it's been an ongoing process.
Thanks again, Chris. Good to see you. Congrats.
Thank you so much.
Chris Dolman, Hall of Famer, Minnesota Vikings. We'll come back after a short pause and chat with Channel 4 political reporter Pat Kessler. That's next.
This is Dan Barrero on The Fan.